A reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 18, Description of Varnashram Dharma, verses 1 to 24, and maybe we'll do some more verses, but we'll finish the whole chapter today. So, verse 1. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Vanam Vivikshu Putreshu Dharyam Yasya Sahaivava Vana Eva Se Chantas Chichiyam Bhagam Ayusha. Translation: the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "One who desires to adopt the third order of life, Vanaprastha, should enter the forest with a peaceful mind, leaving his wife with his mature sons, or else taking her along with him." Om Jnana Tumarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshumini Tamyena Tasmai Shri Gurave. You can pass this book back to on and back. So what do you remember from yesterday's class? A little shuka?
The devotee has already achieved the goal of
Varnashram. Devotee has already achieved the goal of Varnashram. Very good. Okay, copy it.
Text 27, one should not disrespect the Acharya in any way.
One should not
disrespect
the Acharya in any way. Adi Purush?
Every member of Varnashram is expected to follow the principles of Ahimsa, Asteya, freedom from lust and anger. And all of them, and those who are outside Varnashram, have no cleanliness, and they argue without reason.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes.
Talking about two different aspects of Varnashram.
Two different aspects.
And the Grihastha.
Mm-hmm. Grihastha and Brahmachari. Yes.
And the one that comes from Brahmachari, Everybody should train up in a spiritual master's ashram, and then they get to a certain age, they choose which.
Right.
They go and they want to remain Brahmachari or become upper program and get married.
Right. So there's a choice at a certain point whether to remain Brahmachari your whole life or to take up the Grihastha ashram. So we have some nice examples of Janani Vas and Pankaj Angri, who were lifelong Brahmacharis. They are lifelong naishtika brahmacharis. And they're not taking sannyas or anything. They don't want disciples. They're just going to remain brahmacharis. Okay, anybody else remember? Yes?
In Satyayuga, everybody is Hamsa.
Everyone is Hamsa in Satyayuga?
And in Tretayuga, the division of Rana.
Treta, the divisions come. Yes?
Grihastha should live at
home
as a guest.
Grihastha should live as a guest in his home.
And he should not have no sense of possessiveness.
No sense of possessiveness, yes. Yes.
It's written two or three times here that in the morning and evening, or every day, one should respect Krishna in the form of the demigods, forefathers, guests, and all living entities.
Right. They have their morning and evening duties. Yes, and I was reading in that book by Bhakti Vikas Swami that in the evening all the ladies will blow conch shells and they'll have arti and they will light this dhoop to get rid of all the inauspicious beings that come at that time of the day. And they all blow conch shells. You can hear the conch shells. And Prabhupada had that in Mayapur. He would have... Janani Vas was doing it for some time and taking around dhoop, this frankincense, big, huge... billows of smoke would come and they would blow a conch shell. And they would, I remember when I was there, they called it ghost puja to get rid of all the ghosts. And that's the practice in the Vedic culture, the evening time. And in Bangladesh, that's what you would hear conch shells coming from every house, and everybody would do that to purify the house from inauspiciousness at sunset. Because at sunset is the time when Lord Shiva rides in the sky with all of his associates. So therefore, it's an inauspicious, not so auspicious time. They feel this night is coming, and all the rakshasas and ghosts are going to become prevalent and in charge. Okay, anything else? Yes.
Grihastas practice mercy.
Mercy, charity for grihastas, yes. For brahmacharis, cleanliness and education, yes. And for vanaprastas, tapasya, austerity. Sannyasis, truthfulness. Okay. So now he's talking about vanaprast, and you can go alone or you can take your wife with you. Purport. In Kali Yuga, a human being generally cannot live more than 100 years, and even this is becoming most unusual. A man who has a reasonable expectation of living for 100 years may adopt the vanaprastha order at the age of 50, and then at the age of 75, he may take sannyas for complete renunciation. But not that many people live to 75 in these days. Especially devotees seem to leave earlier. Since in Kali Yuga very few people live for 100 years, one should adjust the schedule accordingly. But then at the same time, I don't think we got to that part yet. Did we about old ages from 45 to 60? Anyway, that will come maybe in a future purport. Youth is up to the age of 45. They're very interesting. It's that one purport where it talks about the change of body. The verse talks about change of body. And there's a comment by Vishnu Chakravarti that youth is up till the age of 45. And then middle age is from 45 to 60. And old age starts at 60. And so that is that. Of course, it used to be, but now I think the scale has moved down also for Kali. Because I see. Even some young people have arthritis and, they get the old age diseases already. Okay, so Vishnu Chakravarti comments, the 18th chapter describes the life of vanaprast and sannyasi, and as well the general description of a devotee without ashram. But don't think this means somebody who has no ashram. It's the Paramahansa, as far as I can remember. We will see. So verse 2, having adopted the vanaprast order of life, one should arrange one's sustenance by eating uncontaminated bulbs, roots, and fruits that grow in the forest. One may dress oneself with tree bark, grass, leaves, or animal skins. So we don't follow that, obviously, because we're not living in the forest. The vanaprasthas of ISKCON are traveling and preaching, pretty much. I know a good example of one who is a guru. What's his name? Sankarshan and his wife. And they are vanaprastha, and they're traveling and preaching since a few years now, and he's taking disciples as well. Purport, a renowned sage in the forest does not kill animals, but rather acquires skins from animals who have suffered natural death. According to a passage from Manu Samhita, quoted by Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the word medhyay, or pure, indicates that while residing in the forest, the sage may not accept honey-based liquors, animal flesh, fungus, mushrooms, horseradish, or any hallucinogenic or intoxicating herbs, even those taken as so-called medicine. So rules for living in the forest. If you're living in the forest, you don't take these drugs or mushrooms, or because you might get hungry and there's a lot of mushrooms in the forest, but you're not supposed to eat those. Horseradish, yeah, I don't know what's the problem with horseradish. There's probably some story about it in Mahabharata, where it came from, where it's contaminated.
Let's ask.
Oh, yeah, okay. Do you know why horseradish is well, you can't have that while you're in the forest?
It incites passion.
Oh, it incites passion. Okay, there you have it. So it incites passion, therefore no horseradish. So brahmacharis should also, and sannyasis should not eat horseradish. And grihastas too. Okay. So fungus, we know, is not good, and mushrooms. And this ahimsa, I have one of my son's friends, Guru Kuli, he He sells mridangas that are ahimsa mridangas. They're from animals that have died a natural death. So he has ahimsa mridangas. He's selling from Mayapur, and his name is Sujal, in case anybody needs an ahimsa mridanga. So that is also there.
It's cow skin also?
Yeah, cow skin. Cows who die naturally. Yeah. Because you see a lot of that in Mayapur. They throw them in the Ganga. They're on the edge of the Ganga, and they just sit on the edge, these dead cows or buffaloes, and they smell. But yeah, they throw them in the Ganga, some people anyway. I don't know about the Mayapur people, but a lot of people just throw them in the Ganga, and then they sit there and the dogs come. So, verse 3, the vanaprastha should not groom the hair on his head, body, or face, should not manicure his nails, should not pass stool and urine at irregular times, and should not make a special endeavor for dental hygiene. Should be content to take bath and water 3 times daily and should sleep on the ground. Oh, very heavy rules here. Really controlled. Controlled life. Verse 4, thus engaged as a vanaprastha, it gets worse now, one should execute penance during the hottest summer days by subjecting oneself to burning fires on 4 sides and a blazing sun overhead. During the rainy season, one should remain outside, subjecting oneself to torrents of rain. And in the freezing winter, one should remain submerged in water up to one's neck. Okay, so time, place, and circumstance, cannot do these things. But I did see one person doing this on Govardhan with the fires in the summer. I saw him sitting, four or five fires around him, and then hot sun overhead. So purport, who tells us, who are these austerities for? One who engages in sense gratification must perform severe penances at the end of life to counteract his sinful hedonistic activities. A devotee of the Lord, however, naturally develops Krishna consciousness and need not subject himself to such radical penances, stated in Pancharatra. Naradito yadi haristapasa tatakim. Naradito yadi haristapasa tatakim. Ntarbahir yadi haristapasa tatakim. Nantarbahir yadi haristapasa tatakim. If one is worshipping the Lord properly, what is the use of severe penances? And if one is not properly worshipping the Lord, what is the use of severe penances? If Shri Krishna is realized within and without everything that exists, what is the use of severe penances? And if Shri Krishna is not seen within and without everything, then what is the use of severe penances? In other words, no use of severe penances. Better you just be a devotee. Yeah, one time somebody asked me, are you doing any vrats? I said, no, India's enough vrat for me, just living in India. For 40 years almost. It's complete package of ruts. Don't need to do anything extra. It's just enough just to survive and do your daily work without impediment and keep your mind sane. And so verse 5, one may eat foodstuffs prepared with fire, such as grains or fruits ripened by time. Though you can cook, if you find some grains in the forest. One may grind one's food with mortar and stone or with one's own teeth. Well, at that age, I don't know if you can, if it's going to work. Yeah, vanaprastha time. Your teeth, you can't even eat, you know, this badam with gore. It's impossible. In Vedic civilization, it's recommended the end of one's life, when you go to a holy place for spiritual perfection, in sacred forests, one does not find restaurants, supermarkets, fast food chains, and so on. Thus, one must eat simply, reducing sense gratification. Although in the Western countries, people eat processed food, one living simply must himself separate and pulverize grains and other foods before eating. This is referred to here. Yeah, living in the forest. Anybody ever live in the forest here? Adi Purush, yes. How did you eat?
I had something to eat.
Oh, okay. You brought stuff with you.
Some bark and some growth and things are there.
You ate some bark from the trees?
Yeah, some grows from the trees.
Something that grows on the trees? Fungus?
Sort of fungus.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's not allowed. You have to...
these are not mushrooms.
Not mushrooms.
It's like a thicker bark.
Oh, the bark you were eating. Okay. So it's okay, not the fungus. So he didn't break. He was eating the bark of the trees. How long did you live in the forest? A few days? A few weeks. Okay. And who else lived in... You lived in the forest?
I live in the mountain. We were cultivating our own vegetables.
Oh, you had your own garden. That's not like forest.
We had goats. So we had
goat milk, yeah. That's different. That's... I mean, people... You were living in a house, so that's not the same.
Yeah,
living in the forest. Yeah, that's good. So the time may come when we'll have to all live in the forest and do that. Yeah, so the vanaprastha, verse 6, should personally collect whatever he requires for his bodily maintenance, carefully considering the time, place, and his own capacity. Should never collect provisions for the future. Purport. According to Vedic regulations, one practicing austerity should collect only what he requires for immediate use, and upon receiving gifts of foodstuff, he should immediately give up that which he has previously collected so that there will be no surplus. This regulation is meant to keep one fixed in faithful dependence on the Supreme Lord. So if you have something left over from the day before, then you have to give that up, give it to someone else, and then you depend on Krishna again. If something comes, then okay, you take that and then don't keep your other things. One should never stock food or other bodily necessities for future use. The term deshakala bala bhikya indicates that in a particular difficult place or in time of emergency or personal incapacity, the strict rule need not be followed as confirmed by Sri Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur points out that unless one is completely incapacitated, one should not depend on others for one's personal maintenance, as this will create a debt that can only be repaid by taking another birth in the material world. So if anybody here is depending on others, you owe them something. You have a debt. This applies only to those endeavoring for personal purification. Okay, so here's the clause, the catch. Not to those engaged full-time in devotional service to Lord Krishna. So if you're a full-time devotee, it's okay. You can depend on others because your body is for Krishna, your life is for Krishna. But if you are independent, then you might have some debts to pay. A pure devotee eats, dresses, and speaks only for the service of the Lord, and thus whatever assistance he accepts from others is not for himself. He's fully surrendered to the mission of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, one not so surrendered will certainly have to take birth again in the material world to repay all of his debts to others. Devarshi putatta nirnam prachinam. So those who are taking shelter of Mukunda, they don't have debts to anyone. Verse 7. One who has accepted the vanaprastha order of life should perform seasonal sacrifices by offering oblations of charu and sacrificial cakes prepared from rice and other grains found in the forest. I didn't know there were grains in the forest. There are, I guess. There used to be, maybe. I don't know about now. Nowadays. Yes?
Yeah, there are many wild things that grow.
There are wild things that grow.
Yeah. Like leaves of the
air. Yeah, green, well, grains, though. Grains.
Wild grains.
Wild grains. Okay.
Wild.
Mm-hmm.
Berries.
Yeah, berries. Wild grains. The vanaprastha, however, may never offer animal sacrifices to me, even those sacrifices mentioned in the Vedas. So vanaprastha must be a strict vegetarian. One who has taken the vanaprastha order of life should never perform animal sacrifices or eat meat. Verse 8. The vanaprastha should perform the Agnihotra, Darsha, and Purnamasa sacrifices as he did while in Grihastha Ashram. Should also perform the vow and sacrifice of Chaturmasya, since all of these rituals are enjoined for vanaprastha ashram by expert knowers of the Vedas. Purport. Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has given a detailed explanation of the four rituals mentioned here, namely Agnihotra, Darsha, Purnamasa, and Chaturmasya. Conclusion is, everyone should simply chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, and avoid the difficult entanglement of Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. If one neither chants Hare Krishna nor performs such rituals, one certainly becomes a Pashandi, an atheistic fool. Okay, so we have to chant Hare Krishna, or else we become a Pashandi. 9. The saintly Vanaprastha, practicing severe penances and accepting only the bare necessities of life, becomes so emaciated that he appears to be mere skin and bones. Thus, worshipping me through severe penances, he goes to the Maharloka planet and then directly achieves me. Purport: Vanaprastha, who develops pure devotional service, achieves the Supreme Lord Krishna while in the Vanaprastha stage of life. One who does not become completely Krishna conscious, however, first goes to the planet Maharloka or Rishi Loka, and from there directly achieves Lord Krishna. And so it's a higher planet, and there are all devotees up there. One achieves Maharloka or Rishi Loka through strict observance of positive and negative regulations. However, without developing a taste for chanting and hearing the glories of the Lord, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, it is not possible to achieve the perfect liberation of going back home, back to Godhead. Therefore, on the Maharloka planet, the unsuccessful sage gives more attention to chanting and hearing, and thus he gradually develops pure love of Godhead. So it is possible to go back to Godhead from the higher planets, according to this statement here, that he will go back. He just has to perfect his chanting. So better we do it now, but this life we don't have to, because you live a long life in Maharloka, a many, many, very, very long life. Okay, verse 10. One who with long endeavor executes this painful but exalted penance, which awards ultimate liberation, simply to achieve insignificant sense gratification, must be considered the greatest fool. Just imagine, you do all these austerities, and then you get another useless body that you cannot go back to Godhead. Purport: Although the process of Vanaprastha described by Lord Krishna is so glorious, even the consolation prize is promotion to Maharloka, one who consciously performs this process for such promotion to heaven is certainly the greatest fool. Everybody knows what is a consolation prize? It's a Western term. He doesn't know. Yeah. When you don't get first prize, then they have like a second prize. They call it a consolation prize. Like, okay, you get something, but you don't get. So the first prize is to go back to Godhead. The consolation prize, you didn't get the first, is to go to Maharloka, which is not bad. The Lord does not want this process to be abused or exploited by materialistic rascals, for the ultimate goal is love of Godhead. So I wonder if these people actually go to Maharloka, the ones who want sense gratification. You know about that?
It's a Muni Loka. This is not for sense gratification, really.
Yeah, okay. So he can't. He probably wouldn't make it so high if he's. If that's his purpose. Right. Well, it says to achieve sense gratification. Well, hopefully they'll get good association while they're up there and not make mistakes and come back. Verse 11. If the Vanaprastha is overtaken by old age, and because of his trembling body is no longer able to execute his prescribed duties, he should place the sacrificial fire within his heart by meditation. Then, fixing his mind on me, he should enter into the fire and give up his body. So, what happens when you can't do anything anymore? That you just go inside the fire and finish your body. That's for the Vanaprastha. Purport: Since the process of Vanaprastha is recommended for those nearing the end of life, there's always a likelihood one will prematurely succumb to the symptoms of old age and be unable to reach the final stage of sannyas. If one simply cannot carry on his religious duties due to old age, it is here advised he fix the mind in Lord Krishna and enter into the sacrificial fire. Although this may not be possible in the modern age, We can appreciate the absolute seriousness of going back home, back to Godhead, as evidenced in this verse. And I think Shibhakti Siddhanta Saraswati has a very nice comment on this, entering the fire. This is verse 11, right? Yeah. Purport. Yes. Actually, in this case, he's very merciful. Only those who are attached to materialistic life, who therefore suffer because of their enjoying spirit, need enter fire to give up their bodies. So only these people who are in the material consciousness and taking vanaprast, they have to enter the fire. Yeah. Well, they might. You can't. They're doing it just for higher thing, and they're willing to do anything, you know. They're willing to do anything to go to the higher planets. So, when the mind is fixed on the Supreme Lord, one does not see the need for relinquishing his body in that way. Rather, by the performance of congregational chanting of the holy name of Krishna, the fire of material existence becomes extinguished. Isn't that beautiful? Instead of entering the fire, you just chant Hare Krishna and put out the fire of material existence. So we have such nice path given to us by Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati, Lord Chaitanya, that we can just easily chant Hare Krishna and go back to Godhead. Okay, verse 12. If the vanaprastha understanding that even promotion to Brahma Loka is a miserable situation develops complete detachment from all possible results of fruitive activities, then he may take the sannyas order of life. He doesn't even want to go to Brahma Loka. 13. Having worshipped me, yes, we had a student here who wanted to go to Brahma Loka. It was, what was his name? From Australia.
Madan
Gopal, yes. He was interested in Brahma Loka. He may go. Yes.
To go to Brahma
Loka? Yes.
But he'll come back here again.
No? Depends.
Yes.
Depends. Brahma Loka, no, you come back from Swarga, for sure. But Brahma Loka, you may stay or you may come back.
Nishta Bhakta, even from Swarga, goes up.
Yeah? The what? The who? Nishta.
Sanishta.
Sanishta.
It's in the 8th chapter of the Gita, quote from the
Baldevijusan. 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So one who has Nishta, he will keep going, even in Swarga. One is a devotee. Yes. And Prabhupada, I mean, we have heard, has said that 90% of his disciples will go to Swarga. Mm-hmm. Swarga Loka.
Swarga Loka fire.
No. Okay. Just read, study 5th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam.
Because you are saying Swarga Loka
going. Okay, verse 13. Having worshipped me according to scriptural injunctions and having given all one's property to the sacrificial priest, one should place the fire sacrifice within oneself. Thus, with the mind completely detached, one should enter the sannyas order of life. So the sannyasi is not supposed to light a fire, but according to Bhagavad Gita, that's not sannyas. It's not he who lights no fire and performs no work. But according to the Vedic regulations, the sannyasi doesn't touch fire. So purport, one cannot maintain the sannyas order of life unless one gives up all materialistic association and engages exclusively in devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Any material desire will gradually prove to be a stumbling block in the prosecution of renounced life. Therefore, liberated sannyasi must vigilantly keep himself free from the weeds of material desires, which surface principally in the form of attachment to women, money, and reputation. One may possess a beautiful garden filled with fruits and flowers, but without vigilant maintenance, the garden will be overrun by weeds. Similarly, one who achieves a beautiful state of Krishna consciousness takes the sannyas order of life. But if he does not vigilantly and painstakingly keep his heart clean, there is always the danger of a relapse into illusion. As Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj used to say, there's four causes of fall down. One is aparad, or offense. One is lack of humility. One is... I don't know if that's one of them. One is, offense. And yeah, that's the other thing we were talking about the other day. This is something else. And one is not understanding how to advance in spiritual life or the dark night of the soul. Not understanding anartha nivritti is when you get tested and all these things come, then you have to be careful. And there is one more which I can't remember. Lack of humility. Humility. No trinadapi suniche na. Oh, and the fourth one is lack of good association. This is Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. It was about the last class he gave before he left his body, which I have, and he was talking about anartha nivritti. And he was saying the cause of fall down from high places, he was saying, but I would say this is for everyone, that all of us have to be careful of aparad, and we have to keep our heart clean from these weeds. This is also Bhakti Tarangani, that's swimming in the ocean of the nice things you get from bhakti. You get reputation, you get money, you get association with the opposite sex. So you have to be very careful not to think, not to have a possessive attitude towards anything, but to realize everything is belongs to Krishna. So 14. This man taking sannyas is going to surpass us and go back to Godhead. Thus thinking, the demigods create stumbling blocks on the path of the sannyasi by appearing before him in the shape of his former wife or other women and attractive objects. But the sannyasi should pay the demigods and their manifestations no heed. Yes. So imagine the demigods coming in the form of his wife to try. In fact, yes, I remember, I won't tell any details, but Satchinandan Swami was sharing his experience of one time he was trying to chant japa and everything was coming in his mind. And so it must have been the demigods doing this. Purport. The demigods are empowered with universal administration, and by their potency they may appear as the former wife of sannyasi or his other women, so the sannyasi gives up his strict vows and becomes entangled in sense gratification. Lord Krishna here encourages all sannyasis by telling them, pay no attention to such illusory manifestations. Continue your duties and go back home, back to Godhead. So all sannyasis should read this section of Bhagavatam and know what's happening when these things happen. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati comments, the demigods are administrators of universal affairs who award the fruits of one's actions. So here he tells exactly how this happens. They may be born as one's legitimate wife and children. The demigods. Yes. Yes. So many Gurukulis are demigods. Mm-hmm. I can see. Because they have a very high standard of living no matter where they are, and they want to enjoy. They may be born as one's legitimate wife and children, so they can create disturbances on the path of a person who is cultivating Krishna consciousness. Not that my son is like that. When one eagerly tries to render devotional service, the demigods attempt to put obstacles on his path by posing as his wife, son, or friend. No, my son tells me, why are you so attached? You should be detached. Because he wants to have his own life. So, yes, he's preaching to me. He knows all the philosophy, so he can tell me what is the correct path to take in life. And it's also good for him. They try to misguide one from the path of spiritual life by advertising that material enjoyment is the goal of human life. In the name of religion and on the pretext of duty, they misguide a sincere sannyasi, so he falls down from the renounced order of life and gives up his desire to worship the Supreme Lord. That happened with one disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, I heard. The wife came and dragged him away. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was crying for that person. Oh, at the fire sacrifice, the wife came. He was about to get his danda. And the wife came and chased him and got him chased him away. Yeah, so she must have been one of those demigods.
I think now the new rule is the wife has to sign when the husband takes
That's better, yeah. Because, I mean, I know my friends. She got married at 16. Her husband took sannyas when she was 17. And another one, she didn't even know her husband was taking sannyas. My other friend, he took it, you know, without telling her. And one day she found out. So it's it's not like that anymore. And now you have to. There's more rules. That's a good rule. That's a good. And also, I heard you have to. The oldest child has to be 16 if the wife is a devotee. The oldest son should be at least 16. So you don't, you know, you have to take care of the children before you take sannyas. Okay, verse 15. If the sannyasi desires to wear something besides a mere kopan, he may use another cloth around his waist and hips to cover the kopan. Otherwise, if there's no emergency, he should not accept anything besides his danda and water pot. So that's time, place, and circumstance again. Purport. Sannyasi attracted to material possessions will spoil his worship of Lord Krishna. Verse 16. A saintly person should step or place. Now we're going from sannyas to sadhu. Sadhu, a saintly person. This is outside of the ashram, or it could be sannyasi. It's for everybody, actually. A saintly person should step or place his foot on the ground only after verifying with his eyes that there are no living creatures, such as insects, who might be injured by his foot. He should drink water only after filtering it through a portion of his cloth. And he should speak only words that possess the purity of truth. Similarly, he should perform only those activities his mind has carefully ascertained to be pure. Report. While walking, a saintly person is careful not to kill any tiny creatures on the ground. Similarly, he filters his drinking water through cloth to avoid swallowing small creatures living within the water. Oh, boy. I hope.
So many bacteria there.
Yeah, but there are things sometimes I see in our water that are living, like little worms. If your water sits too long, you will see something moving in your water. And that's, you know, that's the osmosis water. I'm just telling, yeah, be careful when you buy this water. And make sure you get it from a good place. Speaking untruths simply for sense gratification is detrimental to devotional service and should be avoided. Speaking impersonal philosophy and glorifying the sense gratification of the material world, even that found in heavenly planets, contaminates the heart and must be avoided by those desiring perfection in the loving service of the Lord. By serious consideration, one can understand that any activity other than devotional service to Lord Krishna has no ultimate value. Therefore, one should exclusively engage in purified activities of Krishna consciousness. 17. One who has not accepted the three internal disciplines of avoiding useless speech, avoiding useless activities, and controlling the life air can never be considered a sannyasi merely because of his carrying bamboo rods. So the three rods are body, mind, and words. So that is the purpose of sannyas. Purport. The word danda indicates the staff carried by those in the renounced order of life, and danda also indicates severe discipline. The Vaishnava sannyasis accept the staff made of three bamboo rods signifying dedication of body, mind, and words to the service of the Supreme Lord. Here Lord Krishna says one must first accept these three dandas or disciplines, namely control of voice, body, and mind within oneself. Practice anilayama, or pranayama, regulating the life air, is meant to control the mind. And one who always thinks of service to Lord Krishna has certainly achieved the perfection of pranayama. Merely carrying the three external dandas without assimilating the internal dandas of bodily, mental, and vocal discipline can never make one an actual Vaishnava sannyasi, as explained here by Lord Krishna. And the Hansa Gita section of Mahabharata and in Sri Rupa Goswami's Upadeshamrita, there are instructions regarding the sannyas order of life. Which instructions in Upadeshamrita are for sannyasis? Which verse? first, Vacha Vega, Manasakota Vega. Yes, that is for sannyasi. And it says at the end of that verse, if anyone who can do these, control these six urges, can be a Goswami and make disciples all over the world. So that is instruction for sannyasi and guru and Goswami. One who takes sannyas for the false prestige, making a show of saintliness without actual advancement in Krishna Kirtan, will soon be vanquished by the external energy of the Lord. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, silence is control of words, giving up action is control of body, controlling breath is control of mind. He who does not have these three controls or internal dandas is not a sannyasi. Okay, so for us, of course, silence means to chant Hare Krishna. And action means to serve Krishna. So let's see what Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says about this. One who accepts the renounced order of life simply for enhancing his false prestige, thus making a show of being an advanced devotee without actual advancement in hearing and chanting the Lord's glories, will soon become a victim of the illusory energy of the Lord. So, warning by Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati Thakur. Verse, now here we hear about Madhukari. 18. Rejecting those houses that are polluted and untouchable, one should approach without previous calculation seven houses and be satisfied with that which is obtained there by begging. According to necessity, one may approach each of the four occupational orders of society. So you can even go to a Shudra's house if they are pure, if they are following. Purport. Saintly persons in the renounced order of life may beg from strict followers of Vedic culture to obtain foodstuffs and other bodily necessities. According to Vedic injunction, a renounced saint should beg from the Brahmana community, but if there is danger of his starving, he may beg from Kshatriyas, then Vaishyas, and even Shudras if they are not sinful, as expressed here by the word Vigarhyan. Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati Thakur explains that Asankliptan indicates one should not approach certain houses, calculating, in that place I can get first-class food. That house has a big reputation among beggars. And so sometimes people may think like that. Without discriminating, one should go to seven houses and be satisfied with whatever may be obtained there. One should beg for one's personal maintenance only from houses where the inhabitants, being sincere followers of Varnashram culture, have earned their livelihood by honest means and are free from sinful activities. One may beg alms from such householders. One must not beg alms for one's personal maintenance from those who oppose the Supreme Lord's devotional service, for such service is the whole purpose of Varnashram culture. Those who oppose Vedic culture pass laws to make begging by saintly persons a criminal act. They thus insult and persecute saintly beggars, considering them to be ordinary vagrants. A lazy person begging to avoid work is certainly abominable, but a saintly person dedicated to the service of the Lord and practicing the discipline of begging to develop full dependence on the Lord's mercy should be given all facility in human society. Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati Thakur explains there are three forms of collecting alms. Madhukar is a process of imitating the bee who collects a tiny amount of nectar from each flower. In this way, the saintly person accepts a very small amount from each person, avoiding social conflict. Process mentioned here is a sankhlipta, by which one indiscriminately approaches seven houses, being satisfied with whatever may be obtained. Prak pranita is a process by which one establishes regular donors and collects one's maintenance from them. In this regard, Sri Viraghavacharya has described the initial stage of sannyas called kuti chaka as follows. A man accepting the initial stage of sannyas arranges for his children or other relatives and well-wishers to build him a kuti, or meditation cottage. He gives up worldly affairs and sits within the cottage, trying to remain free from lust, anger, greed, illusion, and so on. According to the prescribed injunctions of regulated life, he accepts a tridanda, purifies himself with a water pot, shaves his head, leaving a shika or tuft, chants Gayatri Mantra on the sacred thread, and wears saffron garments. Bathing regularly, cleansing, performing ashraman, chanting japa, studying the Vedas, remaining celibate and meditating on the Lord, He receives regular supplies of food from his children, friends, and relatives. Accepting only the bare necessities of life, he remains fixed in his cottage up to the moment of liberation. So there was that that prostitute who was transformed by Haridas Thakur. She actually lived like that. She lived in a cottage and whatever came. And she chanted japa and did everything. Any examples in our experience of somebody doing that? Kuti Chaka. We don't know anybody. Probably in India there might be some people who do that. They just build a cottage. Now, Kuti Chaka, yes. Means Kuti. You have you have your bhajan Kuti. Yeah.
After the tiger attacked Raghunatha Goswami.
Did he attack?
He didn't attack, he was threatened. He was. Goswami admonished him.
Oh.
And then they started having kutirs.
And they started having kuti. So they became Kuti Chak. Not Kuti Chak, but they had kutis at least. Srila Prabhupada used to do Madhukari in Vrindavan, so I'll tell you about that. When he was in Vrindavan and before he came to America, there was, Prabhupada. He used to collect madhukari from door to door. This is, so one person is speaking here. What is the name of this person? And he said he saw Prabhupada doing madhukari. And he told how Prabhupada did it. Oh, it's very long. Gopal Chandra Ghosh of the Vrindavan Research Institute. So he used to see Prabhupada. He told some history how he collected madhukari. He came to my house. Oh yeah, I had seen this and I had also given madhukari to him then. He came to my house when he was living in the Brahma Kund area on Gwalior Temple's backside. In between Vanshi Gopal and Radha Damodar, he lived at Brahma Kund. Living alone, he went door to door saying, Jai Radhe, Radha Madhava, Jai Gaur Hari. And Sambhraj Basis give him 1 rupee, chapati, some sabji. He collected madhukari from door to door, then offered everything to his Gurudev and took prasadam. And so that was, and there's another one here from a milkman who used to give him milk every day. Kishanlal Sharma Pandit, a Dudwala living near Radha Damodar Temple. My father used to give milk to Srila Prabhupada when he lived at Radha Damodar Temple in the early 1960s. Srila Prabhupada would come daily by our shop with his tiffin cup and my father would give him cow's milk for his offering as madhukari. Sometimes if my father noticed Prabhupada had not come for several days to collect milk, he would send me there to deliver it. Srila Prabhupada was very affectionate to us and we had love and appreciation for him. I saw Prabhupada now and then only to take milk to him. In those days, there was a way to cross through the Radha Damodar courtyard, but now it has been closed off. When I would bring the milk in a tiffin for my father, I would ask Prabhupada if he had anything to eat, but Prabhupada would only want milk. I saw in his room there was only perhaps a little fruit or dry flour, nothing else. He was too busy in his hari bhajan to eat. Prabhupada never used to talk very much. He was always studying his books. Seemed to me he stayed in his room and did not talk to people except in the evenings on his veranda. He would close his doors and do his bhajan in his room. I remember his room at that time was very old and in disrepair. The bricks in the walls were crumbling in many places. There was no stone floor, only dirt, and there were some weeds growing in the floor. The land all around Radha Damodar Mandir was like a jungle then. It was not built up with so many rooms and paths as it is today. When we went there in 72, it was, still, the courtyard was just dirt. It was all dirt, and we were sitting in the same dirt of the Goswamis and Radha Damodar. It was just the dirt, and it was all crumbling. Around the whole thing was just like piles of rubble, looked like it was bombed out. Even the front of the temple was like all crumbling when we visited there. And that was in 1972. One time when I came to deliver the milk, I arrived at his doorway and stood there with the container, but he was chanting Harinam very deeply and didn't hear me. So I was waiting there for some time because I did not want to interrupt his devotion. I kept peeking inside his door, which was partly open, and I noticed there were many tears in his eyes and on his face. I kept waiting there, but still he didn't look up to see me for a long time. As I watched, I noticed on the dirt floor there were some bugs. Then I saw a scorpion crawling on the ground. It was coming close to the feet of Srila Prabhupada, but he didn't notice. I watched it come closer and closer. I made little noises to catch his attention, but he was still chanting and not aware of outside things. Finally, after I had anxiously waited for what seemed like quite some time, I called out to him, "Oh, Prabhu, there's a scorpion near you." He slowly opened his eyes, which were wet with tears. When he looked at me, his glance was so deep with feeling and mercy. He just looked at me and then down at the scorpion. I asked him if I could sweep it from the room. In a gentle, grave voice, he answered, "No, no, please don't worry about it. Don't disturb. He's also a devotee." Another time, I went there to his room with some milk from my father, and I found his doors locked, shut. No one knew for sure where he had gone, but some said Prabhupada had gone to the west. He left Vrindavan Dham quietly, without notice, and we missed him. After some years, I saw him again when he came back to Vrindavan. I was walking on Vrindavan Parikrama nearby Keshiga, and I saw a few white devotees surrounding a sannyasi. Like many of the local people, I was very curious and came nearby to look. Amazingly, I saw it was my old friend, Srila Swami Prabhupada Maharaj. Then Prabhupada looked over and saw me. He called out to me and motioned for me to come nearby. I ran to his feet and touched them in the dust. Prabhupada then embraced me with love. Rubbing my head, he said to his students, "Oh, this is my boy, my old friend. He brought me milk and helped me before when I had nothing." Then Prabhupada took off a necklace of some valuable stones he had on his neck, broke it, and put some of the stones into my hand. We have kept that gift and made those stones into earrings that my wife wears every day. So, Prabhupada. He remembered his old milkman who gave him madhukari. Like, it just reminded me of Krishna with the jewels in his basket or something. And, but Prabhupada, he used to do, and there was another one which I couldn't find in this book, when it said that Prabhupada used to go to 7 or 8 houses every day. So he actually followed this regulation of 7 houses. Not like he kept going door to door. But I couldn't find it in here, but I do remember one remembrance where they said he used to go to 7 houses. I don't know. Well, I don't know. You ask Krishna, who said it. 7. Yes?
You asked who do you know? I remember Sachinan Maharaj.
Sachinan Maharaj.
He used to do this in Germany.
In Germany he used to do it.
He said they would lead them to their fridge with all the terrible things, and they would just sometimes have, you know, to try to find whatever is possible to offer it.
Really? He would just go to the Karmi. I know, he didn't know about this rule here. They would go to the Karmi people and ask.
Yeah, that's the only people you have there.
That's true. They said, done traveling Sankirtan or something, the devotees.
When he accepted sannyas, he said they were following these rules.
Oh, wow. When he accepted sannyas, Sachinan Swami. Yeah, I know, actually, Prithu and his wife, when they went to Germany to start a temple, and they had a small baby with them, then they would beg people for milk, and they had no money. You know, in the old days, they send you to a city with no money, nothing, and there you are, and in the middle of the city, no place to stay. And she said she would beg, she would ask people if she could cook in their oven, and she would go and make bread, or else like that. Yeah, I remember she was saying that. And then I know another couple in India. And they also had a 4-year-old child. This is Grihastha. I mean, Grihasthas were following the same thing, actually, in the old days. Yeah. And they had a small child, husband and wife. And they were sent to start a farm in near Ahmedabad. That farm, they have an Ahmedabad farm. So there was no house or anything. And so they sat under the tree and started kirtan and did kirtan. It happened to be the rainy season. So it was raining the whole time. And then one rich man came and said, "Okay, I will build you a house. I will build you a hut. And I will stock it with everything." And that's how they started this farm in Gujarat. It was Rachitambra Mataji. She and her husband and the girl, what's her name? Her daughter. She, Radhika? Jayaradhika, yeah. She was the 4-year-old kid who was under the tree in the rain with a harmonium. Mm-hmm. And that's how they started their farm. They just in the Ahmedabad, near Ahmedabad, Gujarat. Gujarat. Yeah, so in the old days, the grihasas were just like the sannyasis. They were doing just completely depending on Krishna. I know, even us, my husband and I, for visa, they would just send us with no money, no return ticket. We were, of course, in the early days, had to leave India at least 10 times. We were kicked out and we had to go. We went to Burma, and that time we had a phone number. So luckily that man let us stay in some part of his shop in a little alcove, and we were up there. But we were the first devotees in Burma, so that was pretty good. I mean, they were the best cooks, and these Hindus, and it was quite... We had programs 2-3 times a day, and we were only there for 1 week because Americans, if you stay over 1 week, you're immediately put in jail. So that was a problem. We had to leave very fast, but we got our visa for India and went back. Yeah, so it also like that. And they sent us to Bangkok. We went to Bangkok 3 times. One time was no money and no return ticket. And and we went to Bangladesh twice, Pakistan twice, Nepal 2 or 3 times, Malaysia, Singapore. Now it's... And then in 1982, then Indira Gandhi allowed this student, like... extended visa. We could get a 1-year visa and extend it, but before that it was only tourist visa. So it was rough. The first 10 years from 72 to 82 is rough, and then we could get proper visas, like 1 year. 1-year visas. How did we get our return ticket? Yeah, we begged. We went begging from the Indians. we had some magazines we sold. Some magazines. We got donations. Yeah, we just... somehow we found the Indians, and we went to the Indian community wherever we were in Bangkok. We went to the Indian community, and so and then we got a return ticket.
But to go to those countries, you need also visa to Malaysia, Singapore.
Malaysia, I don't think so for Americans.
American,
I don't think so. You need visa. American passport is very good. You don't need for Europe. Or New Zealand, or I don't think you need. We didn't need a visa for those countries.
You get a visa at the airport.
At the airport, yeah. You just go on the airport, and you get Nepal also. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, we were expected to do the same thing. We were sent to Florida, one city, Jacksonville, and had to start a temple, and we did. We started, but then we left. Okay, so verse 19. Taking the food gathered through begging, one should leave the populated areas and go to a reservoir of water in a secluded place. There, having taken a bath and washed one's hands thoroughly, one should distribute portions of the food to others who may request it. One should do this without speaking. Then, having thoroughly cleansed the remnants, one should eat everything on one's plate, leaving nothing for future consumption. So it's not you just beg and eat. You have Food for Life program as well. Even if you do Madhukari, it's not like you just get to keep it, but you have to do Food for Life. If someone asks you for your food.
Here it says.
Purport. Shivakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains, a saintly person should not argue or quarrel with materialistic persons who may request or demand part of his foodstuff. The word vipajya indicates one should give something to such persons to avoid disturbance. Then offering the remnants to Lord Vishnu, one should eat everything on one's plate without saving food for the future. The word bahi indicates one should not eat in a public place, and vagata indicates one should eat silently, meditating upon the Lord's mercy. So when Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, then he didn't want to eat very opulently, and Advaita was trying to feed him just after he took sannyas. And so in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it describes in Madhya 3:70, Lord Chaitanya said, Prabhukhae sanyasir pakranahe pakaran iha kaile kaiche hoi india baram. Lord Chaitanya said, it is not proper for a sannyasi to eat such a variety of food. If he does, how can he control his senses? So in the purport, Prabhupada says that sannyasis should not eat very rich food. And Prabhupada says, all the rich foods offered to Krishna are given to the grihasthas, the householders. Interesting, Prabhupada said that. There are many nice things offered to Krishna, garlands, beds, nice ornaments, nice food and pan, betel nuts, but a humble Vaishnava, thinking his body material and nasty, does not accept such preparations for himself. He thinks that by accepting such things he'll offend the lotus feet of the Lord. Okay, so then what happened? The Dvaita Acharya said, Choya koi charatumi apanar churi amishab jan tomar sanyas erabadi puri. Lord Chaitanya did not accept the food that had already been served. The Dvaita Acharya said, please give up your concealment. I know what you are, and I know the confidential meaning of your accepting the sannyas order. So he requested Lord Chaitanya to eat and give up juggling words. The Lord replied, I certainly cannot eat so much food. And then Advaita said, you please accept the food without pretense. If you can't eat it all, then you can leave some on your plate. And so then he says, Prabhu kayat ana naribo kaite sanyasir tarma nahi uchistarakite. Lord Chaitanya said, I'll not be able to eat so much food, and it is not the duty of a sannyasi to leave remnants. So I guess that's why it's good to give away your food before you eat. Because otherwise, if you leave remnants, then everybody's going to eat, and then who knows what's going to happen to you. Mm. And then he quotes this verse, Prabhupada, from verse 19. So then Dvaita Acharya said, you eat 56 times at Jagannath Puri, and many hundreds of pots of food. The amount of food that three people can eat does not constitute even a morsel for you. In proportion to that, this is not even five morsels of food for you. So he says, by my great fortune, you've come to my home. Please do not juggle words. Just begin eating and do not talk. So then Lord Chaitanya ate. He had Adi Lila 3 from 70 to 78. Verse 20. Without any material attachment, the sense is fully controlled, remaining enthusiastic and satisfied in realization of the Supreme Lord and his own self. The saintly person should travel about the earth alone. Having equal vision everywhere, he should be steady on the spiritual platform. So here are the qualities of a traveling preacher. No material attachment, controlled senses, enthusiastic, satisfied, traveling alone, equal vision, and steady. These are the qualities of a sannyasi and the qualities of a traveling preacher. So purport, we'll go to paragraph 2. One who thus learns to associate with the Lord's devotees actually remains insulated from the contamination of material life. By pure association, one gradually understands the name, form, qualities, associates, pastimes, and devotional service of Lord Shri Krishna. Thus, even in this lifetime, one can become a resident of the spiritual world. In association of pure devotees, there is no material contamination and no useless discussion, since all pure devotees are fully engaged 24 hours a day in loving service of the Lord. By the influence of such devotees, one develops equal vision, samadarshana, sees the realized knowledge of Krishna consciousness everywhere. So then it goes on how you become, you learn your relationship with Krishna, become atmavan, situated in your constitutional position, constantly enjoying the mellows of loving devotional service and carrying out the mission of the Lord and the earth is atmakrita, who enjoys life within the internal potency of the Supreme Lord. So he's describing Atmavan, Atmakrita. And the next one is Atmarata. The advanced devotee remains constantly attracted to the Supreme Lord and his devotees, and is therefore Atmarata, fully satisfied by constant engagement in devotional service. So you have to become an unalloyed devotee with good association. Without unalloyed devotional service, you lose touch. So now the next verse, we're back to Jnana Yoga again. Verse 21. Dwelling in a safe and solitary place, his mind purified by constant thought of me, the sage should concentrate on the soul alone, realizing it to be none different from me. So from Varnasham, Karma Yoga, you go to Jnana Yoga. The sannyasis, the vanaprastas, they're in that level of Jnana Yoga. So paragraph 2 of the purport. Is there a paragraph 2? Yes. One who ignores the injunctions of Vedic literature uselessly wastes his sense activity in illusory material activities. He falsely considers himself to be different from Lord Krishna and therefore imagines that he possesses an interest independent of the Lord's interest. So you can't, if you have this independent interest, no steadiness. And if you cultivate this separate interest, then your meditation will be disturbed, and then duality becomes prominent, and you resume a work program. Okay, so let's see some comments here from Bhakti Sundarva, Shiva Goswami, on this verse. He says that devotional service mixed with jnana is described in this verse, jnana misha bhakti, with desire for liberation, kaivalya kama. And our friend Satyaraj, again, he's talking about why it's not good to be an impersonalist. Our oneness with God is only one side of the story. The difference between us exists, and it is the basis of bhakti. Sameness precludes love. Difference fosters relationship. It takes two to interrelate. This is the realization of a Vaishnava. So although it says that he's alone, he's not alone because he's with Krishna. Verse 22, by steady knowledge, a sage should clearly ascertain the nature of the soul's bondage and liberation. Bondage occurs when the senses are deviated to sense gratification, and complete control of the senses constitutes liberation. Therefore, so it's not like you have to leave your body to be liberated. If you control your senses, you're liberated, if you're in control. Because you're in control. That means liberation. Yeah, you're free from the control of the senses. Therefore, completely controlling the five senses and mind by Krishna consciousness, a sage, having experienced spiritual bliss within the self, should live detached from insignificant material sense gratification. The sage should travel in sanctified places by flowing rivers and within the solitude of mountains and forests. He should enter the cities, towns, and pasturing grounds and approach ordinary working men only to beg his bare sustenance. Purport. According to Shridhar Swami, the word pura refers to cities and towns with shopping centers, markets, and other commercial enterprises, whereas grama refers to smaller towns lacking such facilities. So, only to beg, you go to the towns and cities, not to live there. The vanaprastha sannyasi trying to become free from material attachment should avoid those who are working day and night for sense gratification, approaching them only to engage them in necessary acts of charity. Those who are preaching Krishna consciousness all over the world are understood to be liberated souls. Therefore, they constantly approach the materialistic living entities to engage them in devotional service of Lord Krishna. However, even such preachers should strictly avoid contact with materialistic world when not actually necessary for advancing the mission of Krishna consciousness. The injunction is one should not deal unnecessarily with the material world. So let's see what Satyaraj says. Oh, he talks about the value of a sannyasi. Sannyasi gives much more than he takes. That's true. He gives you so much knowledge. In exchange for the simple food and necessity of life given to him, he shares his considerable wisdom and learning. So if you take from someone, you should give more than you take. It's very important. Give spiritual knowledge. Okay, so any questions or comments on these verses? Yes?
Actually, brahmacharis can accept disciples, but any ashram can accept disciples, but Bhagavatam doesn't mention that.
Yeah, it doesn't mention about ashrams accepting disciples. But we do know that grihasthas have disciples. Sandipani Muni was a grihastha. And sannyasis give sannyas initiation, that we know. And the sannyasis have sannyasi disciples. What we do hear of grihasthas having... So grihasthas mainly were the gurus. And they had the gurukula. Yeah, if we look at the Bhagavatam in the Vedic literature, it was the grihasthas who were the main gurus, and brahmacharis were the students. We don't hear, are there any brahmachari gurus in the Vedic literature? I don't know about that. I don't remember any brahmacharis being gurus, only grihasthas.
We have some brahmacharis.
Oh, I mean, in our movement, that's a different thing, yes? Oh, Gopal Guru, very good. That's in Lord Chaitanya's time. Gopal Guru, very nice. Yeah, in our movement, I'm sure there are brahmachari or vanaprastha. Yeah?
In fact, being a sannyasi was considered to be a disqualification.
Yeah.
That's why Lord Chaitanya mentions specifically kiva vipra kiva nyasi, that even a sannyasi can become a guru.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a disqualification. Actually, grihasthas were the gurus. Grihastha brahmanas, they were the gurus in the Vedic times. And sannyasi was disqualification.
Why?
Because
he didn't have deities, he didn't have an ashram.
You're supposed to have a gurukul and an ashram and all that. Yeah.
And plus you cannot associate with women.
With women, yeah. Our movement is different. Yes. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati started that. Yes, Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu?
Well, he said kiva vipra kiva nyasi.
Kiva nyasi, okay. Mahaprabhu started it. Kipa Ripa Kipa Nyasi. Even a sannyasi can be a guru. A little shuka.
In our movement, many who came on the sannyas list to become sannyasis, suddenly big tests come up in their lives.
When you go on the sannyas list, then big tests come up in your lives. Yes, you have experience.
I've spoken with many, and also... I spoke with different sannyasis who recently took sannyas.
Who recently took sannyas.
And I asked, how do you feel? Are you now happy that you have taken sannyas? And I spoke with three sannyas, new sannyas, they asked this question. And all three said to me, if I knew what was happening, I would not have taken sannyas.
Oh, my God.
So that's... Yes, demigods are testing, but I learned to meditate on the holy name and Krishna and seeing Krishna or all the demigods and in that way worship the demigods.
See Krishna in the demigods. Wow, okay. Interesting. And the experience is that those on the list and those who have newly taken, they get tested. Yes, the test will come. Yes.
Often, why, you know, you're saying about remnants.
Yeah.
Because you're careful who takes the remnants, but I've never understood why.
Oh, yes. Okay, well, if somebody takes your remnants, then supposedly they get some of your good karma, or your good, your piety, your punya. You free them from sinful reactions.
Yeah, I mean...
You take on their sins or whatever. You purify them by giving them your remnants. And Chaitanya Charitamrita says you should take the remnants of the devotee. There's three things, the dust of the feet and the water, wash the feet, and the remnants, I think. Yeah, so you actually, by that, then they get some of your spiritual power. They get it from you. You have to purify them. I mean, there's something happens there. And that's why we don't want to leave remnants. That's why sannyasi should not leave remnants. Prabhupada mercifully left remnants for us.
Gurus, all the gurus.
Our Guru Maharaj always...
I'm sure they feed so much. They make sure. They feed them, a lot. Only there's a few that take fruits and roots, like I think Bir Krishna Maharaj, he doesn't eat much.
But he eats himself very, very less and very...
Jai Dvaita Maharaj. Yeah, so yeah, you have to, if someone takes your remnants, then they get your piety, you get something. Yeah, he said he didn't want to. He said he didn't want to, but...
He was 55, 56 years old.
Mm. yes, maybe 50. 50.
So is this that he didn't want to take
sex? No, I don't know. I don't know why. I cannot answer your question. Well, he's being responsible. He's not giving up his... In India, there's a very strong feeling that I must do my duty. I must do my duty to my family. So in the West, we don't have this so much. In the West, we don't have this feeling of duty to our mother, father, even husband, children, so much. It's not that strong sense of duty, but in India, it's very much there. Yes?
I was reading about this prophet taking sannyas. Three times the dream came.
From his Guru Maharaj.
What a hard life was.
Yeah, right. And he did.
If he took sannyas.
And he did experience that.
Yeah.
As soon as he took sannyas, then he got gored by a bull.
He was not.
Prabhupada, it started with Prabhupada. He also had a hard time after he took sannyas. So. You have to be very... So you're already prepared. You got your test before, so... Yes?
You're saying that to pay the debt, one has to take rebirth.
I didn't say that.
It's not in the purport.
It's in the purport. Oh, okay. It's in the purport. Oh, yes, it says in the purport that you have to take rebirth, yeah. You told him... You cursed him. No, he'll have to. What will happen is he'll have to pay four times with interest next life. There's interest if you take your next birth, then you have to pay 400% interest. 400%, yeah, four times.
If you
have a debt to somebody, and you don't pay your debt, then you will have to pay that much.
Where is it given in Shastras?
I can't remember. Four times, yeah.
But if somebody does gives some donation.
Yeah, if you use it for Krishna, it's okay.
Yes, for Krishna service.
Even for paying taxes, who are you paying it to? Politicians,
anyway. Yeah. Anyway, but there's still, you know, it's cheating. But anyway, that's part of business. But you should pay your tax. Otherwise, you will get caught. You won't escape. He won't escape it. He'll get caught in some life or other. He'll get caught. Maybe this life. Yes? What is the fate of a lady whose husband has taken sannyas? Does she share the benefits? Yes, she will share benefits. In fact, even if it's not a sannyasi, anyone in the family who becomes a pure devotee, you get liberation. You get liberation. If you're husband who takes sannyas, or if the wife is a devotee and the husband's not a devotee, if a child is a devotee, then they can liberate their family many generations before and after. So yes, and we know there's three categories. Oh, maybe you didn't hear that a pure devotee will liberate 100 generations before and after. A preacher, Madhyama, will liberate 14 generations before and after. And the Kanishta will liberate 3 generations before and after. And so, yes.
Well, there's 7 and 20 as well. I've read there's 20 generations.
21 is sometimes. Yeah, I'm quoting Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, who says that. Now, 21 could be from another place. But you do liberate a lot of your family members. Yes. So the question is, does the grihastha have to go through vanaprastha and sannyas? If the grihastha is a kshatriya, then he takes vanaprastha and not sannyas. And if the grihastha is a brahmana, he can take directly sannyas. But in our movement, I believe you have to take vanaprastha. Generally, I see they take vanaprastha first and then sannyas for the devotees. Yes?
There is a
That's
wife
taken.
The level of sannyas also.
If he has a youthful wife.
Useful.
Okay, that makes more sense. Yeah, if the wife is a devotee, then he doesn't need to take sannyas. There's a saying by Chanaka Pandit: If your wife fights, if his wife just drives you crazy and fights with you all the time, then it's better to take sannyas. Yeah, that's this chapter, right. It's the first verse, I think, or second verse. Beginning of the chapter it was, about the brahmana. Yes. Why did he give sannyas? Well, my understanding is that he felt the sannyasis could be free, more free, to preach. Just like, Tamal and Hridayananda, when they were grihasthas, they were preaching, but they couldn't just go here, there, and everywhere.
For
preaching to the devotees. But yeah. Satyut Maharaj, he after he took sannyas, he went to the universities and colleges. He started the college preaching. And then I know Hridayananda, after he took sannyas, he started the whole movement in South America, with a BBT in South America. So a lot of them, after they took sannyas, they did very big preaching work. Yes. Prashanta.
I didn't raise my
hand. Oh, okay.
But there is a very good thing.
Yeah, he wanted them to be very just free of any what do you call it? Not attachments, but obstacles. Yeah, anyway, free of not have to think about anything else, and just only their devotional service, just completely free. Yeah, I know grihasthas, there's, right now,
we have many powerful grihasthas also.
There's one couple who does padayatra all over America. That's all, they just live, and they go town to town, and that's how they live. They're just on padayatra their whole life, practically.
Who's that?
I can't remember their name, but she came up here for Bhakti Vaibhav one year, remember her? They're in Back to Godhead magazine. Okay, Lila Maduri, and then...
I recently
hear a voice somewhere from the sky.
Yeah, you go to CD.
From the...
You hear from distant place.
Yes?
I would ask...
Very slow, very...
Yeah, because
okay, the question is, why are the demigods putting obstacles? And the answer is, from Bhagavatam, that they're envious of those who are getting in a higher position than them. And that is the nature of the material world, that someone goes higher, you want to bring them down. Mm. So that's why.
Even among the devotees. Devotees was a lot in Mishra. But...
Yeah. Abai, you had a question? No, okay. Yeah. Alil Shukha.
Many times the question is asked, what's the age to take sannyasana movement?
Mm-hmm. What's the age in our movement?
I think it's nicely explained in one of these purports that if your lifespan is 100 years,
right,
then at 50 you take on a burst of
75
sannyas.
Yeah.
But I think the average life expectancy for men in the West, at least, is 74.
Mm-hmm.
And if you bring that down to 80%, then you come to 55.
Yeah, 55. Yeah. Yeah, we have to adjust. It's adjusted. I think 50 you're allowed or something.
48.
Yeah.
From 50?
No,
48?
It's from the 40. But
from 40.
But you need to be 10 years initiated.
Oh, okay.
And 5 years fixed in your vows as brahmachari or brahmapastor.
Oh, okay. Yeah. 5 year brahmapastor.
Yeah.
Brahmachari.
And then you can apply.
Oh, even 40.
According
to age?
Yeah.
So all the ones are higher.
If you are 40, then you come on the 5-year list.
Oh, I see.
45, the 4-year list, 50, 3-year list, and so on.
That's good.
But it depends also, you need recommendation of the local national council. They have to recommend you. You are not going. You need the blessing of the devotees, and they may advise you to be put on a 4 or 5 year list.
Mm-hmm.
That's there. They can suggest that.
Is there a 2 year and 1 year list too?
There is a 2 year list for those over 60.
Oh,
or
that's
55.
Good.
In principle, there is a 1 year list, but in practice, the Ministry for Sannyas always bring it back to the 2 years, which the roundups means they want at least 2 years to observe the candidate. Because I'm, since a few months, I'm the secretary of the ministry for Sanya.
Good.
I'm following, I'm in contact with all the candidates. We will have a meeting.
How many candidates are there?
Last year there were 14 on the list.
14?
Yes. And in the meantime, four others have applied. That means 19.
And how many do we have in our movement?
In our movement, 87, now 86. For National Maharaj, 86.
Right, 86. Okay, there you have it. 86 sannyasis and 18 aspiring.
Yeah.
And it is going on. Okay, last question. Okay, the verse said they're envious, so. I mean, and there was some verse we read before, even if you go to the heavenly planets, you find envy, you find quarrel, you find these things even in heaven. So that's why it's not such a good place.
Perhaps it's not that they overstep their authority, it's more subtle. Within their authority and responsibility and service to test people they exercise.
So it's nothing personal.
It
may not be anything personal between you and the demigods. It just might be their service to test you.
It's like sometimes bureaucrats, they can give you a fast track or they can give you a slow track. It's both within their authority. If they like you, they give you a fast track. They are a little something. It's their right. They're not overstepping anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One quick comment to that, or an addition. That yes, they are testing you, they are giving you big test, but then by that test, you make suddenly quickly come up.
Yes.
So they are helping in that sense.
So your experience is by the test, they're making you advance much faster. And that's what we heard, that it's like a ladder. Each obstacle is one of the rungs on the ladder to take you back. And so by their testing, they're actually pushing you forward. And if you're not competent, then you won't take sannyas. You'll just say, oh, I give up. This is too much for me. Yeah? They're in the material world. Dhruvaloka is spiritual, but it's Vaikuntha. And the others are just up higher in the material world. They're higher realms within this material world. There's seven, Swargaloka. And then there's Mahar, Jana, Tapa, Satya. So five higher realms within this material world, heavenly realms, which a person can go to before leaving this world. And then after that, there is Goloka, which is the highest in the spiritual world. Dhruvaloka is a Vaikuntha planet, so it's part of the spiritual world, but not in the Goloka. It's ruled by Narayan. Okay, so we'll stop here.